This is good morning, everyone. This is just a reminder that if you need headsets, they're on the table on the inside of the room near the entrance. So if you need headsets for interpretation, they're there for you. Thank you.
Good morning, everybody. I'm Steve Crocker, Chair of the Board of Directors of ICANN. This is our time for the board to interact with the at-large community. We spend this day, Tuesday, interacting with each of the constituencies, and this is, from our point of view, an extremely important part of our week. As I mentioned in my opening yesterday, we've committed ourselves not only to these kinds of interactions, but to following through with explicit recording of what we think we've heard, what we plan to do, reporting back to you and the entire community on Thursday, following that up with a augmented, I was going to say revised, but more, it's more a question of packaging it and adding what we hear on Thursday as well, with a written report, again, covering what we've heard and what we plan to do. And then having that on the record, we then pull that back up the following time and report back on what we actually did compared to what we thought we were going to do. Thank you. And continue that cycle going forward. So this is the one of the core parts of that process where the key thoughts get expressed. And so with that, we want to plunge right in. No ceremony. Limited amount of background and context setting, and get right to the heart of the issues. I know that all of you have been deeply engaged in the issues of concern to you. I can assure you that the board pays very close attention, and wherever we are lacking context and background or something is new to us, we'll be quite forthright and say so. And Olivia and I have had the benefit of interactions, and we've had this back and forth about topics, and I've just suggested to Olivia that we should start. We probably won't be able to get through the entire set of questions that were outlined in advance, so in the interest of time, let's go pick the key ones, the hot ones, dive right in. And the board is very much interested in what you're interested in, as opposed to having you necessarily engage in a package set of questions that we've put out to the to each of the constituencies. We have Sebastian. I think he's on our board, but I think he's really more one of you. Here. And a good fraction of the board is scattered about in the audience. Raise your hands. I see mostly grouped protectively together over here, but a few outliers. So with that, let me turn things over to Olivier.
Thank you very much, Steve. And it's great to see the board mixing with the community. There seems to be a barrier in the middle. I hope that during our next meeting, there'll be a bit more mingling over, and I also point, oh, Kuwei, you are a pioneer, and good luck.
Kuwei is frequently in the awkward position of being in a different time zone.
Huh? Right. So as Steve said, there are eight questions altogether, four from the board and four from ALAC. we're probably going to go through a tiny subset of the, of those, and we'll start with the ALAC questions to the board. And starting with the first one here is as follows. It's to do with the URS policy issues and the protection of non-trade names. So here's the question. Given the problems ICANN has encountered with its URS plans and with protection of non-trade names such as the Red Cross, is there any effort to creatively address the needs of internet end users and content providers? Why is the URS policy being sent back to the community for re-examination when its problems may lie in implementation, in other words, procurement, rather than the policy? Who wishes to expand on this to start? And just before we start, actually, we've got the whole XCOM next to me on the table, Rinalia Abdul-Rahim, Carlton Samuels, Evan Leibovich, and Tijani Benchema, in case you're wondering. Oops.
Sorry. Let me call on Shireen to take a stab at this.
Okay, so there are basically two issues with the currently proposed URS. One is a fee issue. It seems by what's been agreed or proposed so far is expensive. The aim was to have a URS in the order of $300, $500. At the moment, the text that's written in Module 5 of the applicant guidebook seems to yield to a much more expensive process, right? The whole idea of URS is it's a supplement to what exists. It's a cheap and quick thing to do. So we're only going back for more talk with the community in order to change the text and make it something much more practical and to come up with something cheaper. So we're working on that. We have a two-pronged approach. This is one. The other one is having a provider. All right, so we've put an RFP, an RFI out, and we expect that this is going to result in a choice of provider by around the March timeframe. So we're tackling this problem of fees and timing along two separate tracks. I don't know if I've answered your questions, but I think that's the reason. It's just to make sure that it is affordable and we get it in time. So the timeliness, we're dealing with it. The affordability, we're working with the community to improve it.
Evan?
Hi, this is Evan Leibovich speaking. I think the generation of this question came out from the feeling that this is being sent almost to reevaluate the policy, as in, is there some, well, the way we've been hearing it interpreted in some circles is it's being sent back to the GNSO. Can you cut something out of it that would make it cheaper, which is essentially a reexamination of the policy? So by inference, can you make it cheaper? How can you do something to the process? How can you change the policy in a way that would make it cheaper? And so there's a fear that this very, very hard-achieved consensus that was arrived by the STI group is going to be reopened in the name of financial expediency, and all of a sudden you're going to have all sorts of issues being re-raised, and there's a fear of that. And so the issue that had been raised within at large is, has ICANN done everything it can to find every possible provider to go out and to actually find whether or not the bid that was sent out could actually be achieved? Is the number of providers that have been consulted or have been asked to submit bids, is it sufficient enough to have said, we've exhausted the worldwide supply of potential resolution providers, and so now we're going back to the community to reevaluate how to make it cheaper?
Good question is, which one came first, the chicken or the egg? So I think they try to do both at the same time. One is work through the providers to exhaust the possibility with the current text, and at the same time, just ask the question in parallel, can we actually simplify it a bit to make sure the price is down? Maybe Trang is here, she can add a bit more.
Um, I don't have any additional information at this time, aside from what Shireen has said in URS, but we'll take the note back and talk to Kurt and come back to you with some additional answers.
Alan Greenberg.
I must admit I'm a little bit confused by the question and the reference to non-trade names, and the example used was the Red Cross, because the URS does address the Red Cross and IOC, because it talks about trade names and names protected by treaties and such. The URDP, UNDP. The other thing, the older one, does not protect treaty-endorsed names, but this one does. So we did fix that problem. So that's one issue. I have another concern that goes along with this of trying to get some clarity from ICANN, which I haven't yet. On exactly what was asked of the providers. The reason I have a concern is there is wording used in the URS description as a panel will evaluate. Well, in this case, the panel is one person. But instead of making it clear that it was one person, it was called a panel. And in the eyes of the people doing dispute resolution, panels mean three people typically. There was also reference to some of the answers of, if there's an appeal process, and appeals are very expensive, but there's also a separate fee for appeals. So the analysis doesn't seem to be in line with what the URS really is, but with someone's somewhat mangled version of what the URS is. And that causes a huge amount of concern.
I don't know the detail of the answer to this, but I know one thing is that one of the thoughts is how do you limit the panel involvement, because the hourly cost of a panel is very, very expensive. But I think we need to take this, as Trang said, take it on board and come back to you with a bit more. I don't know the final answer to this question.
We weren't coming to you for the final answer, just to express the concern that there seems to be, if nothing else, a nomenclature issue, which is causing some significant angst in the providers, if not anywhere else. And, again, I've never heard of a context of let's refer this to the panel, but it's one person. It's not common usage.
Shireen, if I may, I believe the issue that you are raising is actually a nomenclature issue, is that the panel, the terminology of the panel actually just referring to one person. But I just wanted to also bring up that there is a session on URS in this room on Thursday at 11:45 where more detailed information regarding URS will be discussed, and perhaps some of these more detailed questions can be brought up at that session as well.
This is not an area that I have looked at myself, but in listening to this, a couple of things come to mind. The question that Evan asked about, in the quest for reducing cost and reexamining, does that throw open the doors to reexamining the policy or making changes to the policy? When I hear that, I absolutely understand the fear that is caused by throwing this back and putting an emphasis on cost. But it's not an absolute connection, and it's a very important line, which I completely agree with, as to whether or not there are alternative ways to implement the policy as opposed to modification of the policy. If one is driven solely by cost issues, then it's very tempting to make changes to the policy as well as changes to the process. But if one adheres to the policy, which has been thrashed out and agreed to, there's still room, in at least conceptually, for reexamining multiple ways to implement that. The second thing that I would add, again, focusing on process issues, there's a number of assumptions always built into these kinds of estimates of what the costs are going to be and so forth. And this has come up in other things as well related to the GTLD program. It would be very helpful, I think, to have a forthright estimate of the anticipated numbers of complaints, of costs, of time to execute, and so forth, in a kind of flowchart and state transition, if I can use some technical terminology, and then to use that as a basis for tracking what the actual experience turns out to be going forward. I think that would be a great piece of discipline in doing the projections. It would help also with respect to some of the nomenclature issues so that we know what we're talking about when we say send it to a panel. If that turns out to be one person who's looking at it for 5 minutes, that's qualitatively different from sending it to a group of people that have to be organized for the purpose. I mean, I'm just going on a bit here. But I find myself hungering for what the key performance indicators are. KPIs is a term of art. And then doing the measurement as we get experience with all this and finding out whether we do or don't understand what we've gotten ourselves into.
Thank you very much, Steve. I think we've had a good interaction on this one. We can then move on. I propose that we jump to the last one of our questions here, the GTLD applications. Sorry, not the last one, the last one on the list. GTLD applications and importance of serving the public interest. The question is a little aggressive, just to stimulate a bit of feedback here. Why has ICANN repeatedly refused to consult its community regarding which GTLD applications might better serve the public interest? ALEC has clearly identified developing economy and IDN TLDs as requiring priority. What message does ICANN send to the world by insisting that all applied four strings are for equal public are of equal public interest value?
I will take this one as well. Okay. Why ICANN has repeatedly refused to consult its community regarding new GTLD application regarding the public interest? Well, I think that it's a little bit unfair for you to make that statement in those words, because we have repeatedly consulted, and the new prioritization plan puts IDNs in a priority in the global public interest. So that is absolutely true. What I think you are talking about, and we heard from you, is about another category of other, like developing economies and other things. Should we include them, right? Is that the question?
I think I'll let Tijani.
Yes, indeed, Shireen. As you know, all the existing TLDs, GTLDs now, are from rich countries, are from developed countries. Okay. And in the program of the new GTLDs, there is a few applications from developing economy. And I see it unfair to put on the same level of priority both kind of applications, because we don't have now GTLDs in the developing economies. So this will give the possibility. This will give more diversity, and this will give the opportunity to people from developing country to better use the internet, because they will have their own TLDs, and it will be a part of the internationalization of ICANN.
Thank you. So let me tell you the process thinking we went through in putting the IDN first, and what is the current issue with developing countries, just to think about it. It's all about objective criteria and the ability to objectively define and identify and put your arms around a category and say that category objectively is in the global public interest. With IDNs, we felt this can be done. It's very clear what they are, and they serve the public interest because they give choice to users in countries which do not use the Roman script. It's consistent with GAC advice. It's consistent with our also international outreach strategy, and the objectives are very clear, the criteria, so you can put this. And there is some consensus among the community. So from the comments we got, there is some really rough consensus that IDN should be first. Now, you look back on the other side, which is, I'm very sympathetic with the comment you made. There isn't, from all the comments we get, any consensus around putting developing countries first. There are concerns about could we objectively define and prioritize and really put some clear objective parameters as to application from developing countries. Do they come from applicants outside those developing countries? Do they come from rich people within those developing countries? Do we have to go back and change the applicant guidebook and application so that we give an opportunity for everybody to define their application tick box? So it is not as straightforward. While I'm very sympathetic, and we are all very sympathetic, it's not as straightforward. But look, it's out for public comment now, the prioritization plan, and we'd very much please hear your input. We're going to take all of the input again very seriously in considering this. The other point noting is that when the final policy on category preferences was made in kind of 2008, the GNSO stated there should be no preferences, except one exception, which is the community strings where there's contention. So, again, so there was no GAC advice, no policy to say go with the developing countries. So it is tricky. So it's out now. Please, all of you, put your comments, and we'll take it very seriously. Thank you.
Thomas, did you want to add something to this?
Thanks. I'll maybe say some of the same things that Shireen said. I mean, my suggestion here is there is a comment period that is open. Make a concrete proposal. And what I would say, backing off a little bit, is that, don't just say consider giving them priority. Because if you say please help us, you put the burden on somebody else to come up with a solution. And the community's had a number of discussions on this topic. And my sense is that there's a fair amount of support for doing something in this space, but there is no agreement on how to do it. And that's the real problem. So again, what I say is make a concrete concrete proposal. Come up with objective criteria for identifying which ones should be given priority to. Do an analysis. You've seen, there are a list of applications there. See how it pans out. Does it end up snagging a whole bunch that people will say, well, this isn't really fair, or not? Propose something as simple, objective, and what the impact would be, and try to get support. Reach out to some of the people that have in the past been sympathetic but have also raised concerns. Because ultimately, the way this would go forward is if the community comes up with a proposal that gains broad support. Thanks.
Let me note that Thomas comes from the IETF, where the standard is rough consensus and running code, and I think that's what you're asking for here.
Send text, as they say.
George?
I think one of the reasons that this has not surfaced is that the people who are affected by the policies that are being suggested aren't at the table. They may be members of a larger community, but they're not members of what we often consider the community, which is a slippery concept, people who are known to us. I think this is a very valuable suggestion, and I thank you for raising it.
Thank you very much, George. And I'd like to thank Thomas as well for this very valuable suggestion of having us try and find a solution. That's a good thing. Judith.
I attended the applicant update yesterday as an observer. And if there's any arena where we can truly help today, it's if you have identified worthy applicants from developing nations with problems with the application, because we're currently within the evaluation period. And something that I truly appreciated, just sitting on the floor, observing the dynamics of our ICANN new GTLD staff and customer service team and the applicants, is that there is flexibility. And I think Tran can talk about that. If there is a question on the answer, please provide more information. And there was a survey that was conducted as to which particular question groups do you feel were unclear? And there was a big percentage about questions on the financial issues. Because in the end, even prior to the issue of how to categorize, is getting them to pass. So let's get these worthy candidates in that pass group, is my suggestion.
Thank you, Judith. And that's also something noted, more work for us. Great. I've got Edmund Chung.
Thank you, Olivia. I guess one of the things that, at least in my mind, and I think for others as well, is the just curious about in the previous sort of model, there was a round robin between the regions, and this particular model has taken that away. I'm not saying that that solves the issue, but I guess it would be useful to understand why that was taken away and what the thinking behind it was. So when we do come up with a suggestion, we have that in mind as well.
Okay.
Chris Despain.
Sorry, thank you, Olivier. There are very, very, very strict rules about how you can run a draw like this. It's done under Californian law, and it's really not. You know, if you're talking about regionally rotating a draw, you can't do it. It's very, very straightforward in how it's written. So, if that's what you are meaning, the answer is no. If you're talking about it in some other context, then we can pursue it, but not in the context of having a draw.
Thank you, Chris. I'd like to move on. I've seen more hands go up in the audience. Annalisa.
Thank you, Olivier. My comment is about public interest and reaching the internet user in developing regions. And I think if the internet user is the customer here at ICANN, maybe we could look at how to reach and benefit the internet user in a new way, in a broad way, a sort of a rethinking way, which is it may not all – I mean, it's great to have – consideration of applicants from the developing regions. But since I've been hearing there's not that many, maybe we could take a new approach and see which applicants might be bringing public interest in the greater capacity for internet users in developing regions. And also what that would look like. Is that access? Is that using IDNs within the application? Or is it money that's actually reaching these developing regions? So I'm really in support of public interest in developing regions, but maybe that looks a little different than just applicants.
Okay. Thank you. And for the transcript, this was Annalisa Roger, just to make sure you're correctly annotated. Bertrand, I think you put your hand up.
Bertrand de la Chapelle for the script. Actually, the draw can be taken as an analogy for a raised bib. Like you get a number. That is the objective part. That's the thing that is absolutely clear cut. You get a number. This number doesn't determine who comes first at the end of whatever race. In addition, you can even have different groupings for who and when starts in the race. And the fact that there's a draw and that IDNs are separated shows that you can use an objective draw and draw other rules. What Sharon said is very important. Any criteria that is added to the use of this number needs to be absolutely clear-cut. IDNs, you make a very clear distinction. They are before, and they are different from Roman scripts. And the reason why I understand the committee has put them forward is because of a balancing or a rebalancing of the domain name space, to take Fadi's word. And so that is a clear alignment of a clear criteria and a clear benefit. What you do afterwards with the raised bib is up to the discussion, and Thomas is right in asking proposals. But in any race, you can have the veterans starting in a parallel line or starting a little bit before or afterwards. They are evaluated in parallel. And the only criteria that is important is that it is a clear-cut, objective differentiation, whatever you want to do.
Thank you. That's a very helpful piece of insight. And rather than spending more time on the details, the floor, the door is open for sending those in. So we want to move on to the next topic.
Thank you very much, Steve. I was just going to add one small thing with regards to process. The questions were drafted up to a month ago, and I think that the prioritization of IDNs is quite recent, which is one of the reasons why it was on there. I just wanted to record the satisfaction, real satisfaction of our community with the fact that IDNs have been put as prioritized.
There was one more point just to... And that is, John, you make a very good point about developing countries. What we also said, and let's move on past the first round, and you're going to help us to help you through the comment period, but before the second round, we have to go through lessons learned and make sure that the outreach to developing countries where we made wasn't right in the first time has to be improved and the effort totally improved. So that's a commitment we definitely make, and we need to work together of how to get this done. Thank you.
Bruce?
Just want to add a slightly broader point, because I'm wary of some of the other comments being made about how to better provide services or improve services in developing countries. I think it would be great if ALAC was actually proactive in identifying what are some of the barriers in some of these regions to using domain names and IP addresses in a more general sense. Because our feeling, certainly my feeling, is new GTLDs itself is probably not the biggest priority for a particular country. But and most of the one of the things I find is a pity is that in a lot of these meetings, if I scan the schedule for the week, it's probably 80-90%. To do with, corner cases, if you like, related to trademarks and new GTLDs, and very little that if I was coming from, a developing nation, that I could sit and go, yeah, this is really relevant for me. And I think ALAC's one of those groups, because you've got a regional structure, I'd love to see ALAC being more proactive and sort of coming to the board and saying, hey, we've looked at this region, and generally these are some things that we think ICANN should do to that region. But rather than focusing just on new GTLDs.
Thank you very much, Bruce. Very good comments, and these will be taken into account. Very good. I think we can move on to the next subject, and we're going to continue shuffling things around with the ALAC white paper being next. Some of you might have read it already, and the question is as follows. The ALAC has produced its first white paper, which re-examines some of the fundamentals of how ICANN works. While there are ALAC reviews and board reviews and SO reviews, has the board or its members given any consideration to an organization-wide ICANN review? In light of external threats and comments about ICANN's effectiveness as a global custodian of the public trust. Bertrand.
Well, thanks for the question. Two points. First of all, the R3 document is a great basis for this discussion, and actually it spans a little bit broader than the very question of the organization of ICANN itself, but it puts it in a general light. And in particular regarding one question that, and without quoting the authors, I appreciate very much the work that has been done here, and I see some of them on the... a lot of them on the panel, actually. One of the very important elements is the notion of scalability of the model, and you highlighted a certain number of elements regarding external pressures on the model. Another dimension is also the internal pressure and the evolution that we are bringing on ourselves with the programs that we've developed. And so without getting into too much detail and to answer your question more precisely, You point to a very important point that the Structural Improvements Committee has discussed at length, namely the silo-by-silo review system and the difficulty that we have when some modification in one silo is potentially hampered or constrained by the impact it may have on another one. And so we have, at the moment, two systems of reviews for ICANN and its functioning. One is the what we call the bylaws reviews, like the regular every 5 or 3 years review of the structures. And the other one are the AOC mandated reviews, the ATRT being the most important one in terms of structure. However, the reviews by the bylaws are vertically siloed, but the ATRT, as was mentioned in previous discussion, is not an overall review of ICANN. It's a review of the specific transparency and accountability mechanisms. And so one of the challenges is that if we want to do a holistic something, we're not going to launch a third category of reviews. I mean, that's not really the direction I think anybody wants to go in. This is why we have tried to trigger a discussion around this theme, as you know, of impact of the new GTLD program on ICANN structure and processes. And the feedback that ALAC has given, including through personal comments by some of its members and also the subscription of the R3 paper, goes along some of the comments that have been provided by other constituencies, ASOs and ACs, and as you know, a page has been set up with all the responses to the call for input that we have launched in Prague. And if the address has not been circulated enough, we should send it again. We intended to do a specific meeting here in Toronto on this topic. For pure schedule reasons, like the agenda was already overpacked, it was not possible to do it here. And so the solution that has been adopted is to have an organizational discussion tomorrow morning for breakfast with the chairs, all the chairs of the SOs, ACs, and constituencies, who I'm very happy to say have all accepted to participate. And the key question will be, how do we conduct this discussion? Because as somebody said yesterday on a private discussion, we cannot go too far too fast, but we cannot either go too slow too late or too little too late. This is a discussion that is an in-depth discussion, and the main challenge, I highlight 2 points. One is, how do we conduct this discussion, i.e. in terms of balance between the impulsion that is being given by the board and potentially the CEO to activate this, but also the energy of the community, because this is not a board process, it's a board triggered process, and the community must be fully participating. How do we handle this balance between the impulsion and the participation so that it's not overburdening everybody, but we do have a discussion? And the second thing is how to articulate this general discussion on the impact with the reviews that are going to start, particularly next year, the plan review of the new, the GNSO review. And again, this is not exclusively a GNSO issue. It's not only about the GNSO, it's mostly about the structure of the GNSO, but also broader. And what we're trying to do, I would say, with the goal of Beijing, is to collate as much input as possible to have a clear list of all the different dimensions that are potential impacts. Some will be mostly organizational issues for the CEO and the staff. Some will be structural evolutions, and some will be process evolutions. But that's the discussion we'll have tomorrow morning.
Sebastian?
Fortunately, the chair says that I'm more in the side of the at-large than in the board, and what I will say here, it's really in this vein, because I know that some of my colleagues in the board disagree with me completely, but I really think that reviewing something who will never exist anymore, it's a loss of time and money. We need to discuss what we will do for the future, not what was done in the past. It was good when we do that the first time because it was a way to assert that the ICANN 2.0 was a good way to organize, to be organized and to do it for the next few years. But now we are over. As the CEO said yesterday, we are in a new season, and the new season needs a new organization. And if we don't spend time in discussing how we want to organize this new organization, and we spend time in discussing what is happening in the GNSO, in at large, in wherever we want in this organization, we will lose time and money. Thank you.
Thank you. And Ray?
Thank you, Steve. First of all, to answer the question that was asked. Bertrand characterized the bylaws reviews as being in silos. Yes, they are looking at individual structures inside the inside ICANN. However, in developing the criteria to do this, there's also criteria included in there, and you'll see as we brief you upon this development, that calls for an evaluation of how the organizations interact with each other. So it's from there that you will be able to understand how each organization interacts with each other inside of ICANN as opposed to doing an overall analysis of ICANN, which probably would, which could actually, you would not get that flavor necessarily. So that's one of the reasons why we really wouldn't want to have an overall omnibus, if you will, evaluation. Other than the fact it would probably take 20 years to do just to figure out what you wanted to ask. The affirmation and commitment reviews are horizontal. That's true. And they do target specific areas of concern. That doesn't mean that we couldn't do something other outside of the AOC reviews if we so desired to do so. However, then again, you're taking up more resources and time that maybe you don't have to do. So that's something that's always possible, but I wouldn't recommend doing it. In regard to the program that Bertrand has been talking about, the launch of the new GG, the impact and so forth, one of the things I've asked him to do is to please give us an acronym so we can say it succinctly, because otherwise it will not succeed as an ICANN program without its own acronym. But it's a very, very important thing, though, that is attempted being done here. Now, the relationship between that and the bylaws reviews, as you all are aware, when you do strategic planning, one of the very first things you have to do is a SWOT analysis, okay? Well, the bylaws review actually gives you the strengths and weaknesses portion of that, because you can then look at an organization and say, well, where are its strong points, where are its weak points, how can we leverage those strong points to deal with this, what do we have to buck up, prop up and reform or whatever in the weakness areas to accommodate this. So they are complementary to a large degree. In reference to the comment that Sebastian just made, it's not a looking back. It's a snapshot in time. And it's not unlike the way that every one of us who has a job doesn't get evaluated on a periodic basis about how we're doing. And so, and that by essence, it has to look backwards to see what you did. And granted, past performance is never a predictor of future performance, but it is an indicator. And as I said, it does produce an evaluation of strengths and weaknesses where we can go forward to make the improvements we need to make in the organization.
Good. Ray? I'm sorry, Judith.
I think this is the perfect opportunity for me to ask, organize for what purpose? What I believe on a personal basis is that we lack, as an organization, organization-wide, the ability to measure quality. We need qualitative measurements. The questions of trust. Are we effectively winning trust? How do we measure trust? How do we measure our stewardship, our leadership? And this is a community-wide concern that we one day, and sooner than later, let's sit down and help our ICANN staff put certain metrics around this elusive thing called quality.
Hi there, this is Evan, and I have a specific answer to that. There's a number of people from At Large who, in fact, have been involved with the Consumer Confidence, Choice, and Innovation, I think it's called, working group of GNSO. And one of the things that was identified is the very narrow bounds that that working group was given in terms of measuring choice, and it was done specifically within the context of the GTLD program. The kind of qualitative measures that you're looking for are capable of being done, in fact, merely by expanding the scope of that kind of work that's already been done, not just between the different applicants, but also between the domain system and what alternatives are out there in terms of measuring trust. So what you're asking for, we're very close to being able to do. Just expand the scope, in fact, of what's already been asked for.
Thank you. So in the interest of time and managing the last few minutes that we have, we're going to Olivia's going to drive over in the direction of the questions that the board has asked of ALAC.
Thank you very much, Steve. There are four questions from the board. Some of the topics actually crisscrossed with the topics that the ALAC actually sent out. With regards to the security, stability, and resiliency of the DNS review team final report, the ALAC has filed a statement which supports the work of that review team. So I think that's already enough. We don't need to go any further on this one. With regards to the impact of the new GTLD program on ICANN structure and processes, I think we've just touched on that, so that's great. With regards to I think maybe the next one, the WHO is Policy Review Team final report, we might wish to touch on slightly. So, Alan Greenberg.
Thank you. I know there have been some questions from the board on the interaction between the comments you got from us and other people and the ESSAC report. I and others have discussed this somewhat extensively with some ESSAC people to point out that their implication that we should address their questions prior to doing anything on the 16 recommendations is perhaps too rigid, that some of those on the 16 could certainly be done earlier. Also, I think they would need to clarify. Their first question was, why are we collecting the data? And of course, if you're old enough, you remember the reasons have changed very significantly. We may have collected them originally find out whose computer it was that it was down, so when it was down, we could tell them. Law enforcement doesn't think that's the only reason we collect it today. Their answer was, well, the answer is very simple. We're collecting it to support the domain lifecycle. And if indeed that's going to be an answer acceptable to the community, maybe they should just sort of given it. The questions are potentially politically loaded and could well mean we have to settle the whole who is debate before we start on fixing any of the simple problems we need to fix, regardless of what those answers are. They say they implied they would quickly issue some clarification of these things. I hope they will in time for your decisions on Thursday, if there are decisions. Although we support the concept of ESSAC, I support the concept of ESSAC, ALAC hasn't discussed it. It's worrisome if you take what their recommendations literally. Thank you.
Thank you. What I've said already and what we'll say more in a more organized and specific way on Thursday is that we're in this process of looking very closely and evaluating the recommendations, that we give great weight to the recommendations from the review team. We also have a requirement to do due diligence and to look at all this. I think we're short we're not yet at the point of making a specific decision, but I think your point that we should not consider this in a simple black or white or all or none fashion is perfectly sensible, that we should try to be a bit deft in sorting out where are the issues that need more work versus the ones that we can move ahead. And as I've tried to emphasize, the presumption and the bias is very much in favor of maximum acceptance of the recommendations rather than looking for reasons not to do it. Then within that to try to be insightful and to be knowledgeable. And as I say, we're in the process of doing our homework and sorting that out. We're not yet ready to make specific decisions and pull the trigger and say we commit to the following things. I know that's aggravating or worrisome to people say, well, look, all the work's done, therefore just say yes. That's not what we do exactly. But it's not a black hole. There's maybe less visibility than I'd like there to be, but it's getting very serious attention.
Just a final comment. The review team, I think, worked skillfully to avoid the really hot political issues and to address things that can be done. I would hate at the last moment for major political issues to be interceded prior to them. And I'm trusting that that is not likely to be disagreed by the board.
I'll just comment that labeling issues as political is a political comment.
Thank you very much, Steve. I saw Bertrand having put his hand up, and then we'll probably have to close.
Just a quick remark on the WIS, echoing a little bit what Fadi must have said in his presentation yesterday. As long as we continue to address this topic by saying this is a law enforcement tool, it needs to be accurate, and it needs to be completely public and open, there's no way we can find any solution. So there comes a moment, and I speak on a personal behalf here, there comes a moment where the community, the board, and the CEO must have the courage to say this needs to be addressed by asking the right question and not starting from the wrong question, which cannot be solved.
Thank you. There is a strong mood, I should say, within the board that recognition that WHOIS has been a thorny, knotty problem for a very long time, and that while we don't want to delay and just kick the can down the road and you know, make it just an unending long problem, we may need to take this opportunity to change the game and try to put things on a more solid footing so that we don't have just the same issues bubbling up over and over again. So there is a bit of a mood to for grasping whatever thorny issues there are and dealing with them.
Thank you, Steve. And just for the record, the ALAC has fully endorsed the WHOIS Policy Review Team final report and has supported it. So I think that pretty much closes the discussion on this topic. And the last topic, the patents in policy development and contract negotiations, is one which we have not had a chance to really look at yet. And I would ask whether it was possible for us to submit an answer in writing.
The answer is absolutely. We look forward to inputs on this. I'll comment that in other forums, particularly the IETF, the issues of disclosure about patents in as standards get developed is an important part of that process. And we're not exactly a standards development organization in the same sense that the IETF and other organizations are, but it's a comparable issue that has crept in, and so we need to come up to speed on that and figure out what our direction is. Did I miss something? Gonzalo, please, thank you.
Yes, on this topic, since you are going to send your writing response, perhaps it's going to be useful to know what is useful is to know what do you think about disclosing patents at the moment of granting the patents or at the moment of filling the patents. That's the kind of issues that you have to have in mind or keep in mind when you think about this question. Thank you.
Thank you, Gonzalo, and that sounds like some more work for our community. Great. Okay, and with this, I think we can close the meeting. Thank you very much. I think it's been extremely productive and a very good and frank exchange. So thank you.
Thank you all.